Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to join you.
Now, with the sort of massive change that we've sort of seen in the sort of streaming industry, you know, a few years ago, there were only a couple of players, and we've really seen, you know, an aggressive push from a range of new players, from Amazon, Apple. So we've kind of got this Game of Thrones of oligopoly. Do you think the sort of golden days of sort of premier content that were sort of offered by services will remain, or can you see the sort of streaming services going a little down market?
I think actually the increasing competitiveness of the marketplace bodes well for the quality of content. It's not endlessly possible to create more and more expensive programming. There is a fair bit of discussion in the industry about there being a bubble. I think that bubble is really linked to the way in which all of these services are trying to amass a catalog, and a catalog can be much more expansive than that 24-hour schedule that has limited broadcasters and cable channels before now. So there is an end, but there's also an end to the number of hours in the day that we all have to watch these programs. And the good news is that they will be available in more of a catalog on-demand system than a situation where you have to watch at a certain time, on a certain date, you don't even have to watch in a certain year.
We had your colleague, RNYT's Raymond Laberto, on a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned that the unique selling point of most platforms is their originals. So with Disney, you've got the new Star Wars spin-off. So taking into account the average consumer, is this content exclusivity a smart move by all these things? And we've certainly seen that with Amazon, certainly focusing on, you know, Lord of the Rings that's going to come through the pipeline. And we've got, you know, a range of other players. Is this the way that they're going to sort of entice consumers to subscribe to their streaming services?
I think the tricky part is figuring out who an average consumer is. You know, in many ways, what these streaming services are doing are identifying specific kind of tastes and certain subgroups, right? So at this point, it appears that the Disney service is going to be more targeted toward kids. Something like Netflix does have some kids programming, but it won't have nearly that depth. So what you see across the different services is a different ratio of depth and breadth of different kinds of content. And I think it's not so much a question of the average consumer, but of different consumers with different taste profiles being able to find services that better serve them than others.
So do you think the average consumer will be able to sort of keep track of all the subscriptions and multiple services and be able to locate content that best fits their interests?
Probably not. I don't think we can keep track already. And so I think it's more that a certain kind of consumer, one that's really interested in certain television shows and that's keeping up with a discussion perhaps on social media, that consumer group, which is probably a pretty narrow niche, they will be able to figure it out. They will seek out the specific content they're interested in different places. I think in general, a lot of the marketplace will continue to be pretty well served by the variety of free services that are offered from whether it's ABC iView, SBS Online, 10play, et cetera. And those consumers may choose to supplement that array of free offerings with one, maybe two other services, depending on their particular case.
So do you think there's room for more players in the streaming industry, or do you think we're getting to the sort of peak point where they'll start to sort of cannibalize each other?
I think we're still in the middle of a little bit of a transition. And so basically what a Disney Plus-like service is doing is replacing what Disney used to offer both in the U.S. and around the world as a Disney channel on multi-channel service. It also means that the Disney company that makes a lot of programs and movies won't be selling those as frequently to channels and networks around the world. So, for example, you see the elimination of Stan's access to that content. Mm-hmm. I think we have more of that yet to come, perhaps, from the U.S. market. We see Warner/HBO potentially coming to market next year with a service. Not clear yet whether that's going to be available just in the U.S. If not, Warner and HBO will probably continue to sell those shows to local providers. For example, that content right now is available in Australia on Foxtel. So what's really happening is sort of the shift in where content is available. And I think it's just a question of the scale of providers. Maybe one more will launch, but probably not many more.
Could we see, like, as a result of this, some sort of consolidation in the streaming services? Can you see mergers or some of those large media companies trying to pick up one of these emerging players?
I think it really depends on what their markets look like. I think the other thing that we have to add to the conversation is the way that services such as Apple and Amazon aren't really in the video business in the same way that Netflix and Disney Plus are. So Apple's service isn't trying to be the one service that you have. Really, they're trying to add value, make sure that people who buy their phones and buy their computers continue to buy their phones and computers. Likewise for Amazon, they've primarily used the streaming service really as an add-on benefit to encourage people to be Amazon Prime members and have free shipping and therefore likely buy more goods from them. Those are the two that are really in an entirely different business. They can exist sort of separately from it all. The costs of their businesses are largely being offset by the primary businesses of those companies. It's just not yet clear what the different identities within the Australian streaming marketplace may be. Netflix is largely not Australian content. Actually, none of them that are available for a subscription fee are primarily Australian content. So I think what the services are doing is waiting to see really what Australians move toward and what is the value proposition that they need to develop in order to stand out in that marketplace.
Does this also affect the modes of distribution? I mean, cinemas and other arenas of performance have had to become more innovative. Do you see the sort of gradual decline of that as an exhibition, or will it always be a sort of powerful niche that, you know, that sort of social ritual of going and seeing a film publicly?
I think you've got it exactly right there. The film industry expected huge disruption to theater going back in the 80s when videotapes came out, and then there was a brisk DVD business and people buying and owning DVDs. And if we look at the trends over time, the declines in theater going do not suggest that home video options like VHS, DVD, and now streaming actually are a substitute for theater going. They may be trimming off a little bit around the edge, but there's also a lot of other reasons why people may not be going to the theater as much. So I think you're exactly right in that there is an experience factor. People go to the movies to go to the movies. And certainly Hollywood has been changing the films that it makes to emphasize films that might draw people out of the home and into the theater because of the spectacle and the scale of the imagery. And I think as long as that's the case, that theater going will remain, you know, it's probably not going to be a huge growth space, but it's also not in some sort of perilous decline either.
Finally, we've sort of seen in the sort of productions, a lot of thing between low budget and franchise productions. It's sort of that idea of the middle budget production seems to have dissipated in the last decade. I think Ben Fritz in The Big Picture suggested like the films with really expansive cinematography, like Children of Men, they probably wouldn't be made today in that so many people now consume film on the television. Has streaming altered the way in which sort of films and dramas are created in that way?
I think there's different arguments to be made. I think one argument is that the what gets called the mid-range film that Fritz talks about being eliminated as a result of the studio's emphasis on blockbusters and big special effects and superhero films. Those films are now getting much better distribution via services such as Netflix and Amazon. And, you know, it's difficult since they don't share their figures, but there may be a case to be made that more people are actually now able to see those films, thus encouraging more of those films to be made. I think in terms of the cinematography question, I think the other place we have to look is really the scale of television that is being produced now, not just the episode of the week kind of cop and doc show,
but
these limited series that have really significant budget, and there's really some storytelling going on there as well.